It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Membership in volunteer service organizations has been declining in the U.S. in recent decades. Since 2005, membership in Rotary International has fallen nearly 30% in the U.S. Other groups like Lions Clubs and Kiwanis report similar trends. The average age of these members has also gone up, with Rotary and other organizations reporting around 40% of their members are age 60 and older. Still, these groups are finding ways to make positive impacts in their local communities and trying to recruit younger generations to get more involved. We've got a roundtable of Wisconsin representatives from Rotary, Lions Club, and Kiwanis with us today to share what they're doing, how these clubs work, and how they're trying to grow. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Are you a current or former member of one of these service organizations in Wisconsin or beyond? What is membership looking like in your club? Is there something you point to that you've accomplished that you're particularly proud of? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Michelle McGrath is district governor of the Rotary District 6250, which includes South Central and Western Wisconsin. Michelle, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Connie LeClaire Meyer is a past international director for Lions Clubs International in Wisconsin. Connie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Justin Hahn is executive director of the Wisconsin Upper Michigan District of Kiwanis International. Justice, welcome to Central Time. Justin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
I want to start by just meeting your groups. Can you each give us a brief introduction of your group, what it does, and maybe what makes it distinct? Let's start with you, Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rotary is, you know, it's been a been around since 1905. It has, gosh, right now it has about 1.4 million Rotarians in our world with, I think, 44,000 clubs. If I think about just our district in itself, it has... We have 55 clubs and 2,400 members, so lots of great people, people of action that do service in their communities. We do a lot with youth, have a lot of opportunities that we serve youth, and I don't want to, I could talk for days, right, about all the things we do, but, you know, our focus really is serving our local communities, but also serving our world and creating impact.
And Connie introduces to the Lions Club.
Sure. Lions International has been around since 1917. Again, service is our mission. We have over 210 countries worldwide where we have our imprint. And we basically want to be able to serve our betterment. We're humanitarian heart, humanitarian mind. What more can we do? And even though it's an international organization, we focus on the communities with which we live and which we can serve. There's a lot of things that we focus on, and we're very proud of the fact that we can do what we can do in our communities and show up every day, even in times of bad things happening, as well as even the good things. So we're very proud of what we've been able to do over the last 100-plus years.
And Justin, give us a taste of what Kiwanis does.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I could say ditto, 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 right? Because we're all kind of doing the same thing. We've also been around since 1915 and, you know, focused on serving the children of the world and in our own local communities. And I know right here in Wisconsin, Upper Michigan, we partner with various organizations, even Lions and Rotary as well, to run all sorts of different programs. But our two main focuses in this area is we do Kiwanis and Cops and Kids, where we partner with police departments and really, you know, combat literacy in local communities. And then we also have the iPads for Autism project, which focuses on providing a means of communication to youth who are on the spectrum. So those are kind of our two projects. So yeah, very similar to, you know, Lions and Rotary, all over the world servicing our local communities.
I want to get into the issue I raised at the beginning, concerns about membership and youth. And it isn't just your three organizations. Sociologists have been writing for years now. A lot of the things that used to bring people together, we're not gathering as much as we used to. I want to hear from each of you about, you know, what you're seeing in your local group, national, and maybe trying to turn the tide. Let's start, Connie, with you and what you're seeing in Lions Club locally and elsewhere.
We're definitely seeing an issue with our membership declining. And it's to the point now where that's our primary focus. I mean, we at one point talked about retention being key, but as people age out, you know, there's only one place for them to go. And so we have to be able to fill that. But we are seeing it locally. We are seeing it internationally. And in the U.S., which it's interesting because we didn't go outside the U.S. until we brought in Canada to our association. And now we're seeing, we're the ones that are showing the trend for the future for the rest of the world, what's happening. And it's people aging out. So our focus has been, what can we do to bring in not only the younger folks, but the folks that are young families, and talking to them and listening to them about what do they want? What are some things that we can provide to them? Of course, we want them to provide volunteering for us, but trying to really get into what are they looking for and how can we meet those needs? And that's a tough thing. That's been very tough for us.
And Justin, at Kiwanis, I imagine you're seeing some of the same things. How are you handling, you know, figuring out where you can meet younger potential members halfway?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are facing a lot of the same similar issues with aging out and things like that. And we've really been trying to focus on, you know, what are the tangible benefits? What are the fringe benefits, if you will, of joining Kiwanis, and what are you going to get out of your experience? And some things that we really try and focus on is the sense of community, you know, especially with younger generations settling into careers and relocating to different communities. It gives them a space where, you know, maybe loneliness is an issue and them needing to find, you know, like-minded individuals in their community, you know, to start their own neighborhood with. So we focus on that. We focus on, you know, being active in our communities with others who are servant leadership minded, you know, really focusing on the kids and wanting to make making a difference. And so we really try and focus on a lot of that and flexibility. One thing that we've really strived for with opening new clubs too is we don't have to be trying to, you know, solve or combat every issue that the community has. Our clubs can be single focused, where if children's literacy is what's important to your club, then let's just focus on that instead of, you know, focusing on hunger or, you know, all the other different issues that may be a thing. So we've definitely tried to go that route as well, trying to give clubs a single emphasis to work on as well.
And Michelle, how is a Rotary reaching out to younger members, which I guess could include everything from Gen X on down?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that Rotary has, I think, done an outstanding job is they've looked at traditional clubs, which seem to They fit the model for definitely that older group of Rotarians, but not so much the younger group of Rotarians that we want to attract. And so we've created satellite clubs. So clubs that actually are around some sort of, you know, hot topic. It could be, you know, human trafficking. It could be something with the environment. And that's what was really resonating with young people. They want to be working on a cause and not just part of a club. One of the things that we've done in Rotary too is we have a program called RILA. I'm actually one of the coordinators in our district for that. And it's a Rotary Youth Leadership Awards camp where we have sophomores in high schools from clubs around our district that come in. And then we charge them to go out and create Interact clubs. So it's the youth Rotary club, basically. And so we have 26 of those right now in the state of Wisconsin. And then as that ages into a Rotary club, which is at the college level. And then we're trying to do a funnel system, right, so that it creates that excitement and urgency around those programs that youth will move into. And I'll say just recently, one of the focus points for Rotary has been mental health. And if you look at all the data that comes out of, right, currently with Ohio State or Yale, it's that service and connection are the two things that actually combat mental health challenges that we have. And that's everything our service organizations are about, right? About serving other people and connecting. So really selling that to young people as a way to get them as members.
We're talking about volunteer service organizations. We have three members of Wisconsin groups with us: Justin Hahn from Wisconsin Kiwanis, Michelle McGrath from Wisconsin Rotary, and Connie O'Claire Meyer from the Wisconsin Lions Club. Looking at membership in these service clubs in the state and efforts to turn around a downward trend, you could join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of presence do these service organizations have in your community? you have questions about how they work and what they do, we've got three people here qualified to answer those questions. Have you joined one of these organizations? What have you gotten out of it? Or have you thought about it but didn't? Why? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about service organizations here in Wisconsin. We've got a round table of representatives from local service clubs in the state. Connie LeClaire Meyer is with us from the Wisconsin Lions. Justin Hahn from Wisconsin Kiwanis. Michelle McGrath from Wisconsin Rotary. They're with us today to share what these service groups do and how they're trying to reach out to new generations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have experience with one of these groups or something similar? What did it mean to you? What kind of work did you do in your community? Are you curious? You've seen the signs, maybe, about a local effort and wonder what the heck is going on there? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also give us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's bring out a caller now. Ken is with us in Monona. Ken, hi.
Hi. I'm calling from Monona, and I've been a member of Downtown Madison Kiwanis for 34 years. And I'd just like to tell all the listeners that I'm grateful for the friendships that I've met, people that I've met over all those years, some great people, mentors. I've also enjoyed the opportunity to volunteer and just been great programs to listen to, you know, every Monday that we meet. And we also are struggling to get new members. So I just want to put my two cents in there and say that it's a great organization. All of these are. And the other comment that I would make is that you can't help somebody without helping yourself, and you can't hurt somebody without hurting yourself. So give yourself an opportunity to help other people, develop great friendships over the years, and join one of these service organizations.
Ken, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Let's throw that to the fellow Kiwanis member. Justin, can you talk about, you know, what you hear from people like Ken as they reflect on what they've gotten out of the organization?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the main topic that comes up when you talk about their experience and what they get out of it is those relationships, those friendships, different mentorships. You know, in Kiwanis, we have youth groups at all of the different school levels, starting in elementary school, that have, you know, come up through, you know, the ranks and progressing through the different levels. And I was involved at the high school level. And so you see a lot of us coming up through the ranks, and we stick around, and Kiwanis provides such amazing experiences of mentorship that's developing the youth in our communities. And I think that's really, you know, a huge benefit that our members get is, you know, those connections and helping, you know, develop the youth for the future.
Thanks again for that call, Ken, at 800-642-1234. I want to bring up maybe a couple of obstacles to recruiting. Michelle, people might have a perception that these groups are mostly men, which they were only men up till a certain point, not just, you know, in our lifetime, I think, or my lifetime anyway. And they might say, well, it's mostly white. One way or another, they might look at your groups and say, this isn't me. How are you trying to overcome that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and people have brought that up already in our conversation. It's just making sure that your meetings, your the things that you're doing attracts all groups, that they feel that they're welcomed, that everyone feels welcomed at the table. I think at the district level, I think at Rotary, that we have been really striving and been intentional about making sure our board is made up. This is the first time in a long time our board, who we have an average age between the youngest member is 21 and the oldest member is 71. And we have, of the, I think it's the 12 members, that six of them are females. So, which is fantastic. You have a great diverse mix. And I think it's really important that we're intentional about creating those things, so then it's a model for other Rotary clubs, other districts, and so forth.
And Connie, this has come up a little bit, but I imagine a common objection you might hear from people is this, you know, maybe this sounds great. I've got a job. I've got kids. I've got, you know, I'm too busy. I don't have time. How do you make the case that you know, it can't fit into what seem like really busy lives.
Yeah, that we do come across that quite a bit. But again, I really like what Michelle said about intentionality. When someone wants to volunteer, they give whatever they can, their time, their talent, their treasure, whatever it is. There's something for everybody. It doesn't have to be the standard highway cleanup or you know, pancake breakfast or anything like that. Whatever someone can contribute, can volunteer towards, is great. And so we just leave it open to what are the possibilities. You help us, tell us what you're interested in. And if you want to put your time and talent towards it, have we got a deal for you? But it is something that we do come across quite a bit. Working families, there were a lot of clubs early on that met at noon. That doesn't work for working folks today. There are a lot that are around dinner time. That doesn't work for families. So we've gone the step two of having online clubs where there is no quote unquote location, but they do meet and discuss online just to meet their needs. But we had to really be intentional and ask the question, what is it that, and we assess their needs, what is it that you're looking for and how can we change if we need to meet your needs?
We are talking about volunteer service organizations in Wisconsin and beyond, what they do, the services, the benefits they provide their communities and their members, and challenges facing them with bringing in new generations. We've got Connie LeClaire Meyer from Lions Club International Wisconsin, Justin Hahn with Wisconsin Upper Michigan District of Kiwanis International, Michelle McGrath, District Governor of the Rotary District 6250. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234, or maybe share your experiences over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. I've been wondering, and this is probably a similar answer for all of you, Justin, how did COVID affect how your organization operated? Did the services you wanted to provide and recruited people?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple levels there, right? First one is how do you operate as an organization virtually without that face-to-face? And I think the benefits of learning how to use various technologies and doing things online and through different platforms is that we learned how to, you know, operate, and it saved room in the budget, moving things from like weekends that were overnights and things like that. But then also as an organization running service projects, I think it pushed clubs into a space where innovation was the primary focus at that time. And so clubs were really able to kind of step out of their comfort zone and try things that they may not have been able to without COVID. And a lot of our clubs have found more successful fundraising projects, more a bigger reach into their communities as far as service efforts and different things like that. So I think, you know, COVID, while it was a difficult time, I think as a service organization, I really think it pushed us to be better and do better.
Michelle, is there something, and maybe I'll ask each of this, is there something in the midst of these declining numbers that's giving you optimism about your organization and the idea of public service these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned, you know, before too, just the mental health aspect of it, that we need to do a better job, especially in Rotary and probably in all service organizations, telling our story. And I think those are stories of the connection, the friendships, and the impact we're having in our communities and our world will encourage people to want to be a part of something bigger and greater, and in turn, you know, fill their cup, right? Because that's what we all need to do. Coming out of this time of isolation, we need to do that. So I think it's really important that we do that.
And Connie, for you, is there something that gives you the glasses half full version of the future for organizations like yours?
Oh, Michelle was spot on with that. We just have to really think outside the box. What are bigger, better, brighter, shinier things that we can do? We all face catastrophes and challenges, but what's really neat is when we all come together with a single mind of wanting to help our neighbor, amazing things can happen.
And Justin, how about you? What's giving you hope for the future of service organizations?
Absolutely. I think, you know, as you come to our events, the that we're seeing younger engagement showing up to events and being a participant in events. And I think, and even just going around and doing club visits and seeing the, you know, the makeup of membership and seeing the success that clubs are having in recruiting younger members and trying new things and the new energy and fresh ideas that are coming from. And I think there's a lot of optimism there. I mean, we have a goal of opening 7 new clubs this year. 2 are already well on their way. And so, you know, there's a lot of optimism for the future. I think we've kind of, you know, overcome that hump, and we're, you know, starting to see some progress again, which is fantastic.
Hey, maybe a dumb, basic question here. If somebody out there's thinking, yeah, this sounds like the thing for me, how do I join? Do they have to be recruited? Do they have to show up at a meeting? Michelle, let's you tackle this. How does somebody actually sign up and become a member?
Yeah, absolutely. You can actually go to either Rotary International or the website Rotary International or our District 62 website, and then just click into membership, and then we get an email, and then we reach out to you and get you started. So easy, easy peasy.
Okay, and I assume it's similar for both of your organizations, Connie and Justin.
Yes.
Connie, give us a quick pep talk for that to a person who's maybe on the fence.
Everybody's got something to give, and we would love to be able to work with you and not only help you, but help you help others. So join Lions Clubs International by looking at lionsclubs.org, and we're there for you.
And Justin, another quick pep talk, and let us know where people can find you.
Yeah, you know, help us, you know, change the world and make a difference in the lives of our children. And you can reach us through at Kiwanis.org or through our district website, which is WIUMKiwanis.org.
A big thank you to all three of our guests today. We've been hearing from Wisconsin Rotary District 6250 Governor Michelle McGrath, Wisconsin Kiwanis Executive Director Justin Hahn, and former Wisconsin Lions Club International Director and current member Connie LeClaire Meyer. They were all with us today to talk about their service organizations here in Wisconsin and how they're managing membership and community service. Hey, there's still time for you. Let us know if you have a history with one of these groups that you would like to share, maybe words of encouragement to get involved in one way or another. You can email ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. The Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents held a closed meeting last week in which they unanimously voted to fire UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao after discovering that he had been making sexual videos with his wife and posting them to pornographic websites. The news made national headlines and sparked some debates about whether Gao should be fired over legal activities he pursued in his personal time. Gao told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that his participation in making consensual adult sexual content falls under his First Amendment right to free speech. In just a bit, we'll talk to an employment rights expert about the free speech implications of the story and what can get you fired even when you're off the job. But first, our next guest brings us up to speed on the details of Gao's firing. Kelly Meyerhofer is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers higher education. I talked to Kelly earlier this afternoon. Now, when this story dropped, from my perspective, it kind of came out of nowhere. It was like regents are meeting. They may get rid of a chancellor. Then later, a couple hours later, this is last week, we find out it's Joe Gao from UW-La Crosse. Can you talk a little bit about just the process of how he got fired, why regents said they did it?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking and a very quick announcement that they were going behind closed doors to discuss terminating a chancellor. I, you know, didn't know, I hadn't heard about this. You know, sometimes you kind of hear whispers as a reporter of something, you know, coming down the pike, but I hadn't really heard anything about this and was trying to figure out who it was. The board met behind closed doors for 3 hours and then came out and said the UW-La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao had been fired for abhorrent behavior, reckless behavior, And it turns out that, you know, they had learned that he had posted videos on porn websites that featured him and his wife and sometimes some adult film stars as well.
What has Joe Gow, now you spent a few hours talking to him and his wife, actually, what has he said about those activities and his firing?
Yeah, it's been interesting talking to him. He's raised a lot of free speech issues related to his termination, and also, you know, the board has started, or rather, the UW La Crosse has started the review process. He's, you know, set to return to teach as a tenured faculty member, and they are kind of reviewing his tenured status. So they may revoke his tenure, which, you know, would be a big deal and a real test of tenure's limits. So I think that's really the next stage of this story.
Can you talk about Joe Gow's reputation and the job he did over 17 years, I think it was, as a chancellor?
Yeah, it was just like maybe a month shy of 17 years that he's been there since 2007. You know, my perception of him as a leader, he's always been pretty unconventional. You know, he played in bands when he was a young adult and brought that to his leadership role, doing like concerts for students, performing, playing the electric guitar. He's also very open, like with media and talking to reporters. And he said over time, UW system is really become very controlled in their messaging. So he sort of stood out in that regard. You know, but despite, you know, being very different from your typical higher education kind of president, UW La Crosse is among the best financially positioned of the 13 universities in the UW system. Enrollment has been very steady. It has, you know, not really dropped dramatically in the way that most other campuses are facing. He pointed out that La Crosse was the only one within the system to avoid furloughs and layoffs when COVID-19 hit, and they have a balanced budget, which quite a few other campuses cannot say that they have at the moment.
Now, this story has gotten some national attention, I think largely because of the prurient side of it. Can you, again, based on the conversation with Joe Gow that you had, can you talk about the kind of online adult videos and books that he and his wife wrote and how he talked about them and presented them to as he talked to you?
Yeah, so he and his wife, I mean, this started, you know, close to nearly a decade ago. You know, they were both came from previous marriages, were divorced, met each other and tell me that they were interested in exploring their sexuality more. They bought, you know, a video camera at Best Buy and started recording themselves and went to some sort of sex conference and learned about, you know, that there's production companies you can hire to film you in a more professional sort of manner. And that company also put them in touch with, you know, adult film stars who have participated in some of their videos.
And the Board of Regents cited, I think, primarily reputational damage to the university system. Have they said much more about, you know, the exact violations and the exact justification for terminating Joe Gow as chancellor, as you mentioned, not as professor?
Yeah, they've talked about how, you know, just having this lifestyle that's become public, it's inconsistent with his role as chancellor. You know, I've reviewed his contract. There's a line in there about how the chancellor may not engage in any activity that may be adverse to the interests of the University of Wisconsin system. So I think that's sort of what they're relying on, that, you know, he's brought negative attention to the university, and because of this, they have the right to fire an at-will appointee.
Kelly, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That was Kelly Meyerhofer, higher education reporter from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. She was with us to take a look behind the headlines at the recent story of UW La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gow, who's fired from that position by the Board of Regents last week for making online adult films with his wife. Coming up, a legal expert weighs in on whether Gow's constitutional rights were violated with his firing, what it could mean for his tenure as a professor, and wider issues of off-duty conduct and whether we can be fired for it on the job. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this story? Do you agree with the Board of Regents' decision to remove Joe Gao as Chancellor of UW La Crosse? Or do you think there should be some free speech protections here? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about the firing of UW La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gao, who is removed from his position for creating sexual video content online with his wife. Our next guest specializes in employment issues and what workers can be fired for. Why the list might be longer than you think. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on this particular story? Do you think the Board of Regents made the right call here or not? Why or why not? And do you have wider thoughts on how someone's off-duty conduct should or shouldn't impact their continued employment in any organization? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Louis Maltby is president and founder of the National Work Rights Institute and former director of employment rights for the ACLU. Lou, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
Let's start with a particular, and this is kind of a unique case here. As you look at this story here in Wisconsin, what is going through your mind when it comes to workplace rights?
The only reason there's anything to talk about is because he happens to work for the University of Wisconsin. He's a state employee. That vast majority of us that work in the private sector, there's no such thing as freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. If you work for a private corporation, your boss can fire you because he doesn't like the way you part your hair, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's not right, but that's the way it is. If you were a couple of years ago standing on a street corner with a sign for or against the war in Iraq and your boss saw it and didn't like it, don't call your lawyer. Don't call the ACLU because there's nothing illegal about him firing you.
Are there certain union negotiations that might at least hinder a company's ability to fire someone in those circumstances?
Well, you know, lawyers are known for being exceptions, and there are a couple exceptions. There are three. One is, and the best is if you're in a union, you can't be fired without what's called just cause. And doing something legal in your private life doesn't even come close to meeting that standard. If you're a government employee, you have some rights because the right to freedom of speech comes from the Constitution. It doesn't govern private corporations, but it governs the government, including when the government is acting as an employer. So whether or not he's going to win his case, at least Gao has some right to free speech under the Constitution. And if you happen to live in Colorado, you can't fire people in Colorado for legal off-duty behavior that doesn't affect their job performance because we persuaded the Colorado legislature to say so. But if you live in the other 49 states, that doesn't help you much.
Now, UW System President Jay Rothman said that Gao's conduct, quote, subjected the university to significant reputational harm. If this comes to a court case and the UW system has to back that up, how do we prove reputational harm based on an off-duty activity?
Well, I'm a little sympathetic to the university, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a public university. They've got a reputation. But we don't know at this point whether or not the reputation has been hurt. Our applications to come off, our faculty, we're turning down offers to join the faculty, our alumni donations down. We have no idea. They might be, but at best, the regents went off half-cocked here. They have absolutely no idea if this has hurt the university. And it might very well not. There was a time when putting a sexually explicit video up on the internet was considered pretty shocking, but there's a lot of people doing it today. Some people were still shocked, but many, perhaps most people, aren't shocked at all.
I've seen some arguments that say the regents were right to remove him as chancellor. As chancellor, you're chancellor 24 hours a day, and you, in your actions, are representing the university. but raised concerns that there are investigations that might pursue his tenure as a professor. Do you see that as an important distinction?
It is. If he were a professor, there's absolutely no legitimate basis to fire him. Professors are supposed to do thought-provoking things, and thought-provoking is also controversial. If a university professor never does anything controversial, or she is maybe not doing their job very well. And you can't say that a run-of-the-mill professor at a university, especially a big university, is the face of the university. If there's any case to be made for the university, it's because he's chancellor. And if he were Harvey Weinstein, they'd have to fire him because he'd be toxic. But whether or not Professor Gao was toxic or not, we don't know. Neither do they.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Marty is with us in Elkhorn. Marty, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm going to posit that human beings are multifaceted creatures, and what this guy does, how does that affect his job performance? I'm going to posit it's probably all the male board members that are jealous.
I'm not laughing. Marty, thanks a lot for that call. Lou, I mean, there's a distinction here. On the legal side of things, they might have the regions might have a very valid case here. Our caller making the case that on a practical level, he doesn't see it impacting the job. What do you think?
Well, it certainly doesn't impact his ability to do the job. If it has any impact, it's what constitutional lawyers call a heckler's veto, where people are offended on customers or the public, and they demand that the person be punished. It certainly hasn't affected him doing his job, and apparently he does it quite well. And the thing about this that's particularly alarming is that what you've got is you've got somebody who was fired for doing something perfectly legal in his private life. It's bad enough you can be fired for doing something legal in your private life if you're working in the private sector. But for academics to get fired for doing legal activity in their private life is just anathema to what a university is supposed to be about.
Thanks again.
For God's sake, he wasn't having sex with children. He was having sex with his wife. What's so terrible about that?
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Lou Maltby, president and founder of the National Work Rights Institute, looking at job protections or lack of same for our off-duty behavior. Starting point, UW-La Crosse former Chancellor Joe Gao removed from that post after posting sexual videos online. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I guess my concern, and you know, in this case, it's porn, so a lot of people, some people are shocked by it, but I'm afraid that the precedent is set. You know, it could be something else, like, you know, like maybe you're protesting what's going on in the Middle East right now, and if they think that's embarrassing or offending some of their donors or, you know, or whatever, you know, it just seems like a slippery slope to go on. And I guess my other point is, who would even have known about it if they hadn't fired the guy? And now it's, you know, it's blowed up in their face, basically.
Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. Lou, Jimmy brings up a point that is very active now on university campuses. Can a faculty member or director of a university be fired based on their political opinions on, say, the conflict in the Middle East? We've seen at least some folks leaving posts over arguments over these very issues.
That's a very good point. You can't say anything about Gaza today without offending somebody. And if I were an academic in Wisconsin, at least in Wisconsin, I'd think twice before I said a word about conflict in the Middle East, because I'm going to offend somebody. And if Joe Gao got fired for offending somebody, I could get fired for offending somebody too. What I would say to people who are upset about Joe Gao because they don't like pornography, well, okay, you don't have to like pornography, but there's a lot of things that other people don't like. Something you think is perfectly appropriate will offend somebody else. And if the fact that you're offended, that's not a good enough reason to fire somebody.
Thanks again for that call, Jimmy. Lou, I want to bring up a particular category of public expression. Say, even in a private business, there's an employer, and one of their employees is out distributing religious material, you know, Sunday after church, say, or whatever, and it's a religious belief that the employer disagrees with. Is that a form of public expression that would be protected, and it would be illegal to fire someone over, even an at-will employee, over that kind of public expression?
It's absolutely true. I mean, American law is pretty simple. Anybody can do anything they want to, anytime they want to, unless there's a law that says that they can't. That's called freedom. That's also the reason employers can fire you without a legitimate reason. But when it comes to employment, Congress has said that certain reasons for discrimination are illegal. Race, gender, religion, national origin, disability, and in some cases, sexual orientation. There are a number of bases, things that somebody could do that someone else might not like, where you are protected, but only if you're being discriminated against because of who you are. If you're someone just doesn't like what you're doing, and it doesn't involve race or gender or religion, then you've got no protection.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mark is with us in Bloomer. Mark, hi.
So I'm an ordained minister, right? And the United States Supreme Court ruled that as an ordained minister, we do not have the right to file suit against people for discrimination. I got let go from the church. I was serving the church with distinction. They found my Facebook page. There wasn't pornography there. It was Bugs Bunny cartoons and Mickey Mouse, and they let me go. We live in a strange world where we have to be really careful that people don't find out what we're doing. It was innocent.
Well, it's sad, but it's true. I'm probably the ultimate hands-off parent, but when my kids were getting ready to apply to college, I clamped down and I told my son, get that picture of you drinking a beer in your studio off of that, off of your Facebook page, because some entrance admitters official at a college is going to see it and they won't let you in. And it's crazy, but it was true. And he had to take it down. Now, getting admitted to college is not the same thing as being fired, but it's the same thing. I know people have been fired. Many, many people have been fired or not hired because before you get hired today, your boss will frequently Google you. And if he sees you doing something they don't like, having a gun, protesting against the war, saying something about Gaza, they won't hire you. You really don't even have a right to talk to your friends without risking your job anymore.
Thanks for that call. Now, Lou, you mentioned at the outset, legal protections, especially in the private sector over public expression, are slim to non-existent. I don't get the sense that you necessarily like that state of affairs. What would you like to see change, and what would it take to change it?
What it would take is for half the people in America who think you shouldn't get fired without a legitimate reason to tell their congressman about it. The old comic strip artist Walt Kelly had a slogan that says, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." I worked on Congress for 30-plus years, and when the average member of Congress opens their mail, there's nothing in there about the fact that you can be fired without a legitimate reason, nothing in the mail about you can be fired for exercising what should have been your right to free speech. By our collective silence, we've told Congress we don't care. And that would be the first thing that would have to change.
Lou, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Louis Maltby, president and founder of the National Work Rights Institute, former director of employment rights for the ACLU. Been talking about the news last week that former UW lacrosse chancellor Joe Gao was fired for posting sexual videos online, and wider issues of our free speech and expression and whether we have protections in our workplaces. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, driving tests are back for new drivers in Wisconsin after a COVID-related hiatus. Get the latest on the rules of the road and how we train drivers, and you can get the conversation started right now. Did you or maybe someone in your family get their driver's license for the first time over the last, what, 3 or so years now? What was that process like? Were you comfortable with how much training and on-the-road time it was involved in the process? You could email right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Then join the conversation tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. If there are a bunch of words and phrases that you find cringeworthy, you're not alone. And the year starts off with an iconic list of words we want to get rid of. The annual Banished Words List from Lake Superior State University came out earlier this week, as is my journalistic duty. I just used two of them. Each year, the Upper Peninsula University takes nominations for words and phrases that people are sick of. One of them is cringeworthy. One of the nominations said, quote, "The use of this term is cringeworthy." And I am on board with cutting back on the use of the word iconic. This is one that kind of bugs me, and I feel like I hear it a lot in public radio speak. I try to avoid it, but hey, I'm human. I'm sure I've slipped up. Also on the list, Riz, a more recent slang phrase, short apparently for charisma. I think there are more media articles about it now than people who actually say Riz. Plus, impact, when used as a verb. I try to stay away from that one. Share your least favorite words and phrases. Email ideas@WPR.org. Your message could impact... have an impact on language in the future. This is Central Time.